When at 13, he caught on as a sports writer for the Anoka Herald, Garrison Keillor set out to become a professional writer.
And so he has done. A storyteller, sometimes comedian, essayist, newspaper columnist, screenwriter, poet.
Now a single volume brings together the full range of his work, monologues from A Prairie Home Companion, stories from The New Yorker and The Atlantic, excerpts from novels, newspaper columns. The Keillor Reader also presents pieces never before published.
Garrison Keillor is the founder and host of Prairie Home Companion, as everybody knows. Celebrating its 40th anniversary in 2014, he's the author of 19 books of fiction and humor, the editor of the Good Poems Collections, and a member of the American Academy of Arts and Letters.
He has a trio of events in our region over the next few days. More on that later. In the meantime, it's a great pleasure to welcome Garrison Keillor to the roundtable. Very nice having you here.
You guys make it sound so good. You ought to be selling used cars or something.
We do that.
Yeah, we try to do that, too.
Well, I'd buy anything from you the way you put it. Wow, you make me feel very classy.
When I just read that figure, 40 years, it seems unbelievable. Can you comprehend that in any meaningful way?
If you don't quit, you know, and if you're not fired, then, you know, eventually, 20 years leads to 40 years. It's not, you just stick around. It's like becoming the tallest boy in the sixth grade, you know.
You were, weren't you?
Just stay in the sixth grade, and eventually the prize is yours.
But you probably would have achieved that anyway, right?
Yes.
Being your,
I don't know,
your height, a taller man. Yeah.
No, it's the lack of... It's the lack of other job skills, you know, that keeps you stuck in one place for decade after decade.
You're such a hard worker. That's amazing. You work all the time.
Simple things are hard for me, and so I have to apply myself. What you lack in your head, you must make up for with your back.
What you lack in your head, you have to make up for in your back. I get it, I think.
Do you, when you started as a writer, and still obviously a writer, and do you think of yourself primarily as a writer, even though most people would associate you with your work on radio?
No, I'm a writer. I've never performed anything on the radio that wasn't something I wrote, and so it all starts with... you know, what you do at a computer or sometimes a legal pad. So that's what I am. And you can do that when you get up in the morning. I like to get up around 4 in the morning and it's dark and you make your cup of coffee and you sit down with your pad of paper or your computer and you have this momentary feeling of good luck that you are enjoying something that you've enjoyed since you were 8 years old.
Yeah.
And that's amazing.
Tell us about Chet Atkins.
Chet Atkins was a very sweet man who had a very clear style as a guitarist. He came up in Nashville at a time when people were very showy with the guitar and trying to play under the double eagle as fast as they possibly could or playing it up behind their head or something. And Chet Atkins took the electric guitar, the Gibson guitar, and he gave it a voice, and he made it sing. And he realized that the way to reach people was not through staggering virtuosity, but through music, through the voice, to give the guitar a voice as if it were singing.
You liked him a lot, didn't you?
I did. He was a great storyteller. He was a very funny man. And friendship was really his gift. He was a great friend.
Do you, when you look at what you've accomplished over the 40 years with the show, of spotlighting musicians and writers and wonderful talents that you've done, there has to be some pride in that of showcasing that and putting it in a place where it so fits and was admired.
No.
All right.
No.
There's a good answer.
No, there's not. It's
you take no pride in that at all.
Not really. No.
There is a chance. that those talents would not have been noticed if it were not for the slot that you have given them.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's you can't think about that. Then you're sort of playing God, and that's not really my business. My business is to provide amusement for people who don't have other plans
or on the way to other plans,
and for shut-ins. For incarcerated felons, for people who are trapped in cars on long car trips, and that's who we're supposed to serve. Most people can find other things to do. You know, it's at 6 o'clock Eastern time on Saturday. You know, you can find all sorts of things, play tennis or something, and read a book. But there are some people who need radio. There have been times in my own life when I have needed radio, and you know, like in the car, and so that's what we're supposed to do. Mm. And it's not about the musicians so much, or me, or you know, it's about the listeners. We're putting out this little booklet for our 40th anniversary, and they were showing me all these pictures, you know, that we could put on the cover, and it's people on stage, and that's not what I want on the cover. I want a picture of the crowd at Tanglewood, and they're all coming up to the stage after the show, and they all want to sing, and all these faces are there, and young people and people my age and kids and so on, and they're all look sort of eager. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. So what's all this almanac stuff about?
You mean the almanac? The writer's almanac? Is that what you're asking me?
Yeah. That's it.
Almanac.
Yeah.
What's all the almanac about? It's about brevity. It's a show that demonstrates the beauty of brevity in public radio, where shows tend to be about two-thirds too long.
At least.
And so I do a five-minute show, and people get this conception of 5 minutes as a unit of time, and it changes their lives. They realize that in 5 minutes you can do that much. So in an hour, you could do a whole bunch of those.
It's fantastic. I mean, it is really an incredible
12
gift.
You could have 12 5 minutes within it. Isn't that right?
Is that how you do them? Is that how you do them, Garrison? Do you sit down and do you do more than one at a time?
Well, I do. You know, I do a few at a time. But I think that's the beauty of it, is it's brevity. Because you could easily make it 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And then you'd be trying to fill with things.
Right.
And with a five-minute show, it is what it is. You run through, you trot through a few little historical events and birthdays of distinguished people and writers and scientists and so forth. And then you do a poem, and you give people a poem that is selected for its clarity. They never taught us clarity when they taught us to write poetry in the English department.
Where?
At the University of Minnesota. They taught us, you know, obscurity and opaqueness, opacity, and clarity. I start to value as I get older. When in disgrace with fortune in men's eyes, I all alone beweep my outcast state, is a very clear sonnet of Shakespeare's. And there is no point in his sonnet where he's blowing smoke in your face. This is true of great poetry. Come live with me and be my love, and we will all the pleasures prove. I mean, what's the confusion there? It's a seductive, it's a come on.
You took a break from the Almanac and had Billy Collins sit in for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Did you, A, enjoy the break, and B, enjoy the work of Mr. Collins?
I didn't listen to Mr. Collins. He asked me not to, and so I let Billy go his own way. But when he was done with his stint, he did not volunteer to keep on going. So I think maybe Mr. Collins had had his fill of doing the writer's almanac.
Almanac.
There you go. Would you have, were you, are you thinking about maybe not doing it daily, not doing it? Or is that something
I
that you
I think about
to...
that every day. I think about it, you know. I think about not doing it. I mean, I think about, you know, I think about finding a monastery in upstate New York and sitting and meditating in silence, but I haven't done it so far.
There was a point at which there was a change in the weather. You said, okay, we're going to do something else. And instead of doing Prairie Home Companion, there was that time we all remember when the Broadway stuff and other things were coming on. Didn't quite work out because we all loved the other stuff so much.
Mm.
Looking back on that, what do you think?
Well, I made a terrible mistake, and I tried to retire when I was 43, which is just not a good idea. And I tried to become a citizen of Denmark, and that was, you know, misbegotten. But you only need to make a mistake once. You don't need to make it two or three times. You know, you don't shouldn't have to. You know, you pick up a cat by the tail, and you only need to do it once. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. You learn. I've never picked up a cat by the tail after that first time.
Were you worried in going back that the audience would still be there?
Well, the audience is always changing, and so you just can't think of it. I mean, either you have to bring in people who really know something about audience and marketing, in which case you'll spend a lot of money on that to be really good at it. Either you have to really invest in it, or you ignore it. And I think in public radio we've made the right choice in ignoring all of that. Marketing surveys and all are for television, really, and enormous investment in television and the life of a TV show is, you know, 4, 5, 6, 8 years, and so it's much more intense. We're in a more leisurely line of work, thank goodness.
You did the movie, you know, the Prairie Home Companion movie. Me too. I liked it. Lindsay Lohan, right?
Lindsay was on her best behavior, and she was awestruck to be in a picture with Meryl Streep. And
she was very good.
She was good. She was good. She could cry on cue, and she could do it over and over and over again. Real tears appeared in her eyes. I never saw anybody do that before.
She was a method actress.
I don't think so. I think she must have had something on her fingers or something that she rubbed in her eye. Chemical.
I'm curious as to how was that your idea to do the film, or did they come to you and have to talk you into it?
No. They didn't need to talk me into it at all. Mr. Altman had finished a movie, and he loved to work, Bob Altman, and he was 80 years old. He had bladder cancer, and he had had a heart transplant about 10 years before. So he had a real sense of mortality and urgency, and he didn't want to go into a project that was going to take, as most films do, you know, 5, 6 years. He didn't have the time. And we went to him, and he came to us more or less at the same time, because he saw that he could make a movie about a radio show. He would not need to do any location shooting. He could do it all in the Fitzgerald Theater in St. Paul. And and he could work with me, a neophyte, and I would do it quick. And he trusted me to do it, and I did it quick. It was a script that you wouldn't do that if you had a choice, because all these wonderful actors wanted to be in Mr. Altman's movie, and I had to create parts for them as they became available, and parts that were just big enough to shoot in the number of shooting days that they had available. Meryl Streep had 10 days, and so we had to shoot her scenes in that time. It was not the way a script should be written.
We have a few minutes left, and I just want to get to a bunch of topics here. One is, you're doing a show, you'll be live from Wolf Trap this week. You'll be doing the show from Wolf Trap.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you're out on the road, you got a bunch of events, which we'll talk about in a second, but you're doing all of that, so how, you're simultaneously thinking about the show? Like, mm-hmm. At what point do you start thinking about, this is what's going to be happening in Lake Wobegon this week?
Well, I'm starting to think about it. I need to do something about the high school prom, and graduation is coming up soon, and all these young people, 17, 18, are about to leave town. I need to talk about that, I think. I've got other issues going on in Lake Wobegon. I have to do something with Guy Noir. I think I'm going to have him go to Washington on a case for the National Archive, and somebody has tampered with the U.S. Constitution, and they've written things in the margin of it. And the First Amendment, they've added corporations into the First Amendment. So I'll work up something. Plenty of time. It's only Tuesday, right?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have to be definite until Friday.
Okay.
I should have a clear idea by Friday.
Now, do you write and script that, or is it if you walk out and you have notes and an idea, you're comfortable with that?
Oh, notes are fine for Lake Wobegon. I don't really need much for that. But the stuff with actors I have to script.
Yeah.
I have to put their initials and then a colon and then, you know, a line of dialogue. And I have to indicate sound effects, you know. Footsteps, off, dog, you know, breathing heavily. Chimpanzee.
I'm going to go back to an earlier question
that
you deflected, but I'm curious because this book is a collection. It's a lovely collection. It's of writing that you did for The New Yorker or for The Atlantic, pieces from Prairie Home Companion. When you look at this, is there pride in this work and in looking at what you have accomplished as a body of work?
No, there's not. There's the urge to rewrite. No piece of writing is ever finished, and when you look at it, even if you look at it in type, you still see sentences, you know, that really need to be reconstructed, and there's a lot you'd like to add. No, these are all pieces that were, you know, torn from the author's hands by editors, and now I'd like to redo it all.
You mentioned Tanglewood. You're going to be at Tanglewood mm-hmm. next month, I believe.
Yeah.
You enjoy coming to Tanglewood.
Tanglewood is a fabulous place. My wife was there as a teenager. She was there in the music program. She's a violinist, and she got to play on the stage of Koussevitzky with Bernstein conducting. She'll remember it for the rest of her life. There just is a gorgeous spirit about the place. I don't really know how we fit in, but anyway,
fill the place. That's one way you fit in.
We're privileged to be there, and it's just the most fabulous audience you could ever hope for in your life. You know, when you've been performing in front of Midwesterners who tend to be stoical and you know, they don't want to laugh until they hear other people laughing. And then you go to the Tanglewood audience, and these people love that place. They just absolutely adore it.
What do you think of the Berkshires, though, the surrounding Berkshires, where I live, of course, and that's why it's so important. But what do you make of the culture of the Berkshires?
I know nothing about the culture of the Berkshires. Who are you talking about? Edith Wharton?
Edith Wharton, Edith? The dance, as you know, Jacob's Pillow, and all of that. We really rule when it comes to the arts.
I didn't know Edith Wharton was into modern dance.
She is. She was quite a. You should have seen her in her tutu. Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Quite the hoofer.
I don't know.
Edith Wharton was.
She used to drive around the Berkshires with Henry James, sitting terrified in the seat next to her. I don't know. I love the Berkshires, you know, and I try to pass for a native. I do my best. We usually stay in Stockbridge when we
at the Red Lion.
And so the spirit of Norman Rockwell, a great American artist who is finally getting his due now posthumously.
You bet.
And it's great to be there.
Did you ever meet him?
No.
Yeah, he was around. He's been.
I don't know that anybody ever did.
I did.
You did.
A lot of people did. We used to see him riding around on his bicycle in Stockbridge.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Really.
Quite something.
You have. You're going to be all over the place here in our region, and we're delighted that we were one of the stops on your tour. But you're headed over to. You'll be here in Albany at the Bookhouse. You'll be signing books at 1 o'clock, right? And so Albanians right, we'll be able to meet you at 1 o'clock.
Some Banians, not all Banians, but some Banians.
Some of them will be there.
Be there.
And then tonight you're in Manchester, and you'll be at the Northshire Bookstore in Manchester tonight at 7 o'clock, and then tomorrow you'll be at the Odyssey Bookshop in South Hadley at noon.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll be doing your thing.
Well, I'll just be, you know, wandering around and looking people in the forehead.
It's the Looking in the Forehead tour.
Mm-hmm.
The name of the new book is The Keeler Reader. It is published by Viking. Garrison Keeler, it's an absolute delight to have you here. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks. It was fun.
Well, great pleasure. You want me to wrap up? Okay, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.